Working Cows Podcast, Episode 55.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by the Global Ag Network. Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast. Been through a year of podcasting now, and we are facing some interesting times in the ranching industry. Half of all ranchers are over 55 years old, and the number of beginning ranchers replacing them has fallen by 30% since 1987. Beginning ranchers now make up only 10% of the entire population of all the ranchers in the United States. Beginning ranchers face a lot of challenges that make it difficult for them to start out in a way that sets them up for success. There are cash flow issues. There are issues of facilities and equipment and different things like that that make it hard for ranchers who want to start out to get that start that's going to set them up for success. And so as I've gone through this year of podcasting and talking to different industry leaders and people who are thinking about these things and people who are making decisions on a day-to-day basis that will set their business up for success or failure and the pressure that comes along with that, I've taken some things to heart that I hope can set up the next generation for success if they would implement those practices. And that's really what the Working Cows Podcast is all about. As I've gone on this journey over the last year, I've come to realize that there are many people out there who are in a similar situation to me, looking for a way into the industry, looking for a way to get started in the industry, looking for a way to get into the industry in a way that's going to allow them to succeed rather than trudge along and struggle. And so I think that there are some things that we can do, and it really lines up nicely with the ethos of the Working Cows Podcast. What is the Working Cows Podcast all about? Why do we exist? And we say, you know, that we exist to provide a platform for producers to share paradigm-challenging content. And, you know, I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm just here to give you something to think about as you seek to manage your ranch business more successfully. But really, there's an ethos that runs through everything that we produce, that shapes everything that I say, everything that I think, all the people that I talk to and talk about. And it lines up nicely with what I think it's going to take for ranchers in this generation to get started out. And so what is it that we can do? How do we change this statistic about the age of ranchers and the number of starting ranchers being less than 10% of all ranchers in the country? I think that we do it by upping the profitability that is happening industry-wide, that we increase the profitability that these people are have access to and have the ability to grab onto. And that's why we produce paradigm-challenging content on a week-by-week basis, because each one of those paradigms that we challenge will help with the profitability, or that's the goal at least, that it would help with the profitability of the ranch business of the individual who is taking those practices and implementing them on their ranch business. I think the first thing that we need to do as we seek to up the profitability of our ranch businesses is that we need to make our cows work for us. That's the first play on words that is the title of this podcast, the Working Cows Podcast, is that we take our cows and we put them to work for us. So many people for so long in this industry have been working for their cows. They have been doing things, as so many of the guests of the Working Cows Podcast have said, they've been doing things to prop up that cow. They've been doing things to give that cow a crutch. They've been doing things to help that cow thrive in an environment that she is not adapted to. And so if we can start to take away those crutches, if we can start to find the animals in our herd that are adapted to our environment, and we start to allow them to thrive and to succeed on their own with fewer and fewer inputs all the time, and to prove to us that they deserve to be a part of our operation, then they are going to continue in our herd, and their genetics are going to be the ones that we continue to select as people or as animals that we want to continue to be part of our herd, and animals that we want to continue to influence the trajectory of our herd, because they've proven that in our environment, with little to no inputs, they are capable of surviving. They are capable of continuing to reproduce and produce offspring that are also capable of reproducing with little to no inputs. How do we do that? How do we go about finding those animals? Well, over and over again, I've heard people say it, you know, this slow process of weaning them off of the inputs and the slow process of moving to a new calving season. Oftentimes, I've heard people say, I wish I would have done it faster. I wish I wouldn't have taken so long. I wish I wouldn't have done it. Now, you know, if there's a drastic change that needs to take place in the herd, there are some things to think about, like how much is this herd worth today if I was to take it and sell it at the sale barn? Say you're going to change your calving season date, and you've got a calving season that everybody else in your area wants. How much is that herd worth if you're going to take it and sell it at the sale barn? And then how much would this herd be worth if I moved my calving season, say, from March to May? If I move my calving season from March to May, or March and April to May and June, how much would that herd be worth as a May and June calving herd? It might be less, right? So maybe there's an opportunity to increase cash flow by taking this March and April calving herd and selling it and buying back new May and June calving cows. And I've heard it over and over again from people who are very surprising to hear say it, seed stock guys, people who say, you know what, that these genetics, we can tweak them a lot faster than we used to be able to. We can find the cows that are going to perform in our environment a lot faster than we used to be able to. And we don't need to get so hung up on whether or not our genetics are perfect. Because really, honestly, if all we're saying when we say our genetics are perfect is that we've got a phenotypically attractive animal, an animal that looks really nice on the outside, but it takes her a lot of inputs to look that nice, then maybe she's not the right cow for our environment anyways. Another thing that we need to do to put our cows to work for us is to see them grazing more and more throughout the year. And that's going to take some changes as well. That's going to take some infrastructure changes. We're going to have to address issues of water, and we're going to have to address issues of fencing, and we're going to have to address issues of how we think about our role in managing this cow herd. And then we're going to have to start moving more regularly. And that's going to do some huge things for us. As I say, we're putting our cows to work for us. When we talk about working cows, we're making them work for us. We're turning them into cows that work. One of the guests I've wanted to have on since really the start of the Working Cows Podcast, because he gave me the idea for the title, he said, you know, I took my cows off of welfare for 3 months and I made them go to work. And that 3 months of welfare he was talking about was the hay that he had been taking to them. And there's a lot of different ways to do this. There's a lot of different ways to put them to work for you. You don't have to say, well, they're going to have to graze through a foot of snow. You know, there are people up in Canada that are under snow cover for a lot longer than we are here in even the northern United States and South Dakota where I'm at. who are bale grazing, and there's some massive benefits to that bale grazing, and that's also part of what we see happening when we graze more and when we increase the stock density that is in the pastures that we are managing, is that they are more evenly spreading out that refertilizing effect. They're putting across more of the field. It's not just right next to the water tank. It's not just right where the best grass is. When we increase the stock density, as Johann Zietzmann talked about, we also reduce the selectivity of grazing, and they start to graze in a non-selective way. And that means that their manure patties and their urine is out on the field in a more even way than it would be if we just gave them access to the whole field or to the whole pasture, the whole paddock all at once. If we cut those paddock sizes down and we start to see them impact that paddock in a herd way with increased stock density, that increases the benefits with the manure and the urine, and those things are returning nutrients to the soil in a really great way. And that's why bale grazing is such a great winter grazing strategy, is because you're taking those nutrients that may not have came off of that pasture that are in that are locked up in that bale, and you're increasing the density in which they are reapplied to that field, and you're increasing the organic matter, you're increasing the soil life, and as we've talked about, each 1% of increase in organic matter equals 20,000 gallons per acre of water holding capacity. That is huge. That is huge. Another one of these things that just blew my mind as we've gone through this Working Cows podcast journey is talking to people who talk about, you know, we're always going to have sunshine. We might not always have water, but if we manage our cows effectively, we might not always have rain, but if we manage our cows effectively, we can capture more of the rain we do get per acre of land by putting those nutrients back onto the soil and back into the soil. And here's one thing that is still a bit mind-blowing to me, still a big challenge for me, is this idea that we are going to cut off the ionophores from these cattle to take away the deworming. And how is that going to look? You know, this goes back to another one of those challenges when you start to think about putting your cows to work for you. What are the neighbors going to think when they drive by and they see a cow that is not in good shape because she is dealing with parasites, you know? And I think compassion in that instance is treating that cow and selling her. Treating that cow and selling her. Not trying to force her to survive in a system that she can't survive in, but sell her, and somebody else can deal with her, and they can use the ionophores and those things. But that idea that ionophores turn those patties, those manure patties, from a resource into a liability is a huge challenge, and something that I think that we're going to have to continue to deal with. And I'm not sure that we can just rip that Band-Aid off. I'm not sure we can just make that calving season, or we can just make that change right away, or how that, what that would look like, what that will cause, the different dominoes that will fall farther down the line as we look at this in a systems approach. What else is going to be affected when we start to take away these antibiotics and ionophores, and we start to try and turn those cow patties from a liability back into a resource that can increase soil life and can increase soil health, and we can see these biological entities come into those areas where the cow patties are and break them down and spread them out and return the nutrients that are there back to the soil and increase that soil life and be a real big help to us. So as we talk about upping profitability and putting our cows to work for us, that's the first thing. That's the first play on words that is the title of this podcast. We put our cows to work for us. We make them work for us. We make them go to work for us and do what we need them to do so that we can reduce the inputs, so that we can reduce the amount of time that, not necessarily time we spend, but the amount of things that we do to prop that cow up, to give that cow a crutch. And I think that if we can, as we take those things away, we'll find those cows that are fit to our environment and able to succeed in our environment and able to thrive in our environment. The next thing that we want to talk about is we talk about working cows, and the second play on words that is the title of this podcast, Working Cows, is that we want to work with them. We don't want to work against them. We don't want to, when we go out to work our cows, we don't want to employ force and fear. And as Dylan Biggs said, we don't want to employ force and fear. We want to be patient. We want to let them think about what it is we're asking them to do and to figure out how they can go about accomplishing what it is we're asking them to do. And this is honestly something I'm still learning. And I think it has as much to do with patience as it does anything, that we just have to be willing to wait and allow them to figure it out rather than pushing harder and harder and harder until they do what we want them to do. You know, some of the stockmanship episodes that we've done in the past, you know, I think it was Dylan Biggs that said, you know, when you are willing to be patient and wait, it's kind of impressive how poor of a facility you can get the job done in, that it doesn't take steel all the way around for a cow to be contained, that if you're willing to wait, you can use a bit less robust facility and still get the job done if you're willing to have some patience and employ some low-stress stockmanship techniques. But if we're gonna talk about working cows, that is also something that we need to think about, is how are we able to get this job done safely? How are we able to get this job done efficiently? How are we able to get this job done and maintain our relationships with our or the human resources that we are managing, people that are working alongside of us? How can we continue to work effectively so that it's an enjoyable experience and there isn't a bunch of yelling at help and cattle and different things like that? Working slowly, silently, maybe even, as I've looked at different people who are doing a good job of this, and listened to different thinkers who are thinking a few steps ahead of where I'm at this point in my journey of learning to be a better stockman. I hear a lot of them talking about working quietly, not even making any noise, and that sometimes if you're working quietly as a stockman, the stock will work quietly too, that, you know, there's no talking by the people doing the stockmanship, and there's no talking, there's no mooing or vocalization from the stock themselves, because they're relaxed and they have their heads down. You know, that's such a good, I've seen that happen. I've seen poor stockmanship on my part result in what both of the stockmanship people, actually all three of the stockmanship people we've had on the podcast said, you know, a good stockman keeps the cow's head down. And whether that's they're got their head down and they're grazing in a migratory fashion, as Bob Kinford said, or whether they are, if they've got their head down because they're relaxed, as both Kurt Pate and Dylan Biggs said, you know, we want to be good stockmen, and good stockmen keep the livestock's head down, and we want to work with them. We don't want to work against them with force and fear. We want to work with them and try to help them be relaxed and give them time to think about what it is we're asking them to do and to move through that process. And I know that it's probably a cliche by this point, but everybody has started to say, you know, slow is the new fast when it comes to stockmanship, that you are, if you are working slowly and allowing them to think about what it is you want them to do, that they will, that ultimately, if you're not having to walk back and start over because you pushed too hard and they blew out the side, you know, you'll have better luck. And as I said, I've seen that where a cow's head goes up, that's a good sign that, oh, maybe we've gotten a little bit too much force here, and she's starting to look for a way out over whatever fence it is we might have her in, or whatever facility it is we might have her in. The next and the last one of the different ways that I mean working cows when I talk about working cows is that we want to work on them. We want to work on the cows. We're putting them to work for us, then we're working with them, as much as we can rather than against them. And then we want to work on them. We want to make sure that we are doing what we have to do. We're taking care of our part. If we're going to put them to work for us and we're going to make them our employees and they're going to go to work for us rather than us working for them, we also want to make sure that we are working on them and that we are doing our part to become better at what it is we should be doing. That might be economic analysis. That might be running the economic analysis on what it is that we are thinking about doing, the enterprise that we are thinking about doing, or running the economic analysis on the enterprises that we already have in our business and saying which one of these is making money, which one of these is losing money. Can we stand to lose money on this one because if we take it away from the system as a whole, it's going to have a negative impact on the rest of the system as a whole. Can we stand to take that out, or is having it in there going to, is it tolerable because it's got a positive impact on a bunch of other things like that? And when we talk about economic analysis, I think that we need to, especially when we're talking about beginning farmers or beginning ranchers, starting out, trying to do a good job of starting out in a way that's going to set them up to succeed for the rest of their career, we need to think about reducing debt as one of those ways that we can do that. Because if you strap yourself with a bunch of debt to start with, then you are, as the Bible says, the borrower is slave to the lender, then you have to do things in, you know, you have to be successful now. Strapping yourself with a bunch of debt on the front end says you have to be successful now. And so when we reduce the debt, we can also increase the cash flow, because if we're not having to service debt, we have cash flow to expand the business. We have cash flow to put back into the business. And so how do you get started in ranching without debt? You know, and I think that's why Greg Judy's book, No Risk Ranching, Custom Grazing on Leased Land, is so important. And I think that's maybe that most out-of-the-box bit of that whole idea is the idea that I'm going to find leases that a cow can afford to pay for. And I think we've got future episodes coming up with people who are actually doing that on the ground in their area. And obviously Greg Judy did it for a long time and made it work for him, and it can be done. We're going to get to this in a minute, but we need to get away from being slave to this idea that it can't be done here. That won't work here. That can't be done here. It works other places, but it won't work here. And so I'm going to try and feature producers who are putting these things to work in their environment, in their place, where they are, not having to go somewhere else to find it. But we got to reduce debt and increase cash flow. We need to work on economic analysis and actually analyze the business objectively, not say, well, I really like this part of the business, and even though it's a major loser as far as economics is concerned, we're going to keep doing it. We need to analyze those parts of the business and actually try to put them in action, implement them on our operations. Some other things that we can do to work on our business is that we could sit down and develop marketing plans. Say, you know, when based on the amount of moisture we've gotten, based on the amount of rain we've gotten, we are going to enact a marketing plan at this time. We're going to say, if we don't have this much rain by this time, this class of cattle from our herd are going to go. And I guess what I would recommend, based on my discussions with other people, is that we look at maybe marketing the overvalued animals in our herd first, and keeping some of those that are undervalued, some of those that are still producing in our environment but not going to perform well in the sale ring, and that we try to capture that appreciation in the cow itself rather than just selling off the older animals first or the depreciated animals first, but we try to capture some of that appreciation in our cow herd first. So putting a marketing plan in place and sticking to it. You know, plans are great, but if they're not implemented, they're just writing. They're just pieces of paper, and we need to have the guts to implement these plans sometimes, and not worry about what the neighbors are going to think, but worry about how am I going to make this business an enjoyable business to be a part of for everyone who is a part of it, from our wives and our children to people who work with us and work for us. How can we make this a more enjoyable endeavor? And I think, again, upping profitability is a big part of that, because being broke isn't fun. The next thing that we need to think about as we're working on ourselves, as we're preparing ourselves to be more successful managers of these ranch businesses, is that we need to think about some continuing education. Look around, find the people in your area who are putting on these continuing education seminars. A lot of times they are very affordable. A lot of times the most expensive part of the whole deal is either the travel or the time that it takes to go and to be a part of it. And we need to find ways to free ourselves up to be a part of those things. And, you know, not just because we want to go there and gather information, but we also want to expose ourselves to different ways of thinking. We want to have our paradigms challenged. We want to make sure that we're not getting comfortable and complacent in the way we're thinking. We want to make sure that people have opportunity to tell us that the way we're thinking is not a good way of thinking, or not a smart way of thinking. But maybe even more than all of that is we want to have an opportunity to build a network of people, especially if the continuing education seminar is close to your home. Having that network of people who are thinking differently, or at least open to having their paradigms challenged, can be such a huge thing. You know, and recently I received, someone reached out to me and said, you know, is there anybody doing anything like Greg Judy was talking about in his area, where they're meeting on a monthly basis? And I said, you know, I don't know anybody doing anything like that, but we can start it. You know, we can start getting together and we can start talking about how we're managing our ranch businesses and different things like that. So finding people, networking, finding people who in your area are thinking differently and are willing to open up their ranch to you and say, here's what we're doing. What do you think? We could do better. And what are you going to take home to your place and steal the ideas that we are putting into place here? And how are you going to better yourself as a result of this network of people who are challenging the way each other think and operate? And the last thing that I'll say, and this isn't necessarily a play on the title of this podcast, Working Cows, but you know, one of the things that I think we need a lot more of in the industry is creativity. We'll start there. Creativity. We need a lot more creativity in the industry. And when I talk to people like Joel Salatin and Steve Kenyon, and I look at their operations, they don't have brand new shiny things that are doing the work that they need done on their place. What they have are minds that think way outside the box about how they can solve a problem. And what epitomizes that for me is Joel Salatin talking about the shade that they take around, and they put it in places where they need to increase the herd impact. They need to up the soil life. They need to break off the cap, the top of that a piece of ground that's maybe got a rocky structure to it or something else, and they need to break that up. And they put that shade where they need it. Well, that shade is an expanded wagon chassis and some fabric across the top. Very affordable to make, something they could make right there out of things they already had. They didn't have to go buy something. They just made it. And so, you know, those are things that we need to start looking around. What do we already have here? How can we use what we've already got here to fix the problem that we're facing, rather than going out and buying that piece of iron? You know, as Wally Olson said, every piece of iron you put on that cow's back, she's got to carry it. That calf has got to service that debt. That calf has got to service that. How do we go about finding things that we've already got that can maybe be a solution to the problem, and some creativity and some ingenuity? Another thing, Steve Kenyon recently posted another picture of his solar rock picker, which is actually a mobile watering trough that he has taken from
mostly parts of what he had there, probably other than the solar panel or all things he had sitting around there. And he just posted another video to Facebook. I'll embed it in the show notes page, workingcows.net/55, of a new tweak that he made to that to keep the valve open so that it doesn't freeze, so that he can continue to use it longer through the winter and have access to water there. And so just some creativity that I think is just sit down and think creativity, or I think it was Picasso said, inspiration strikes when I'm working. Like, creativity isn't just, some people aren't just more creative than others necessarily. There is some giftedness, there is some God made me this way, but creativity is something that comes through sweat, working hard, thinking hard, saying this is the problem, these are the things I've got. My personality is I go on a walk and I look at the things that I've got laying around and I say, what could I use? How could I use that to fix the problem that I'm facing right now, rather than going and buying something new from the store that is expensive and that is maybe not the perfect solution to the problem. It just looks like it'll fit. And we just need to think creatively. And the other thing that I think is necessary as we start to really challenge some industry paradigms is positivity. We need to be positive about the opportunities that are before us, and rather than thinking negatively and thinking this won't work here, this can't be done here. I don't know somebody who has seen a broader spectrum of success as far as ecology is concerned than Johann Zietzmann, but he said it on the podcast, these things work everywhere they're tried. And he's seen it work in desert regions. He's seen it work in the tropical regions. He's seen it work in the northern United States and into Canada, where there are where there's snow and other challenges. So we just have to be positive about the fact that we can try this and we can accomplish it and we can do something different. We can do something out of the box. We have to be willing to say, I'm willing to have the neighbors think I'm crazy and do something different, do something out of the box, think differently about the challenges that are facing us. And so those are some of the things that we need to be willing to just say, you know what, I know that there are a lot of reasons this won't work, or I could come up with a lot of reasons this won't work, but for the success of my ranch business, it has to work. And so I'm going to think creatively, and I'm going to think positively, and I'm going to find a way to make this happen, and I'm going to do it. Those are some of the things that I've been thinking about as I've been on this journey over the last year of the Working Cows podcast. I really appreciate all the support and all the feedback, and I would really appreciate some feedback on this episode if you wouldn't mind reaching out to me, workingcows.net/contact, facebook.com/workingcows, twitter.com/YPClayConry. Reach out to me any of those places and get in touch and just let me know what you're thinking about this episode. How has it challenged you? Am I crazy? Am I out of my gourd? Do you want to, whatever you want to tell me, just give me some feedback and let's hear from you about this episode and some of your thoughts regarding this topic of finding ways into the industry and finding ways to put your cows to work for you, and finding ways to work with your cows rather than against them, and finding ways to work on yourself as a manager of assets and resources through continuing education and those types of things. We're kind of in that place where I've got a few different directions we could go with the Working Cows podcast, but I don't have another episode recorded just yet as of the recording of this episode. I don't have another episode recorded just yet, but I promise we'll be back next week with another episode of the Working Cows podcast, episode 56 of the Working Cows podcast coming out next week. Thanks for all your support over the last year, and I look forward to another great year of paradigm-challenging content on the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, Tune in next week.